Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Tag do about your dog and you. A show that talks about what is a guide dog, when do you get a guide dog, why do you get a guide dog, where you get a guide dog from, and how you get a guide dog. And our special guests will share some of their experience with using a guide dog. So greetings, my listening audience. This is Tag Dude, Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. sponsor the show about your dog and you. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. And my host with the most is the engineer, the executive producer, and the announcer, and some more stuff. Good afternoon. And how you doing today, Miss Renee?
I'm a little bit tired today. I had an unexpected errand I had to run, so I'm a little bit tired, but the show must go on. Isn't that the adage?
That's what Bugs Bunny and them say on the Warner Channel. And Daffy Duck and all of them, the show must go on.
All right. Well, then I'm in good company.
All righty. You know, just so much going on. I'm telling you, so much. We lost a dear friend, again, David Pullman, schoolmate, Maryland School for the Blind. But I'll tell you, Mr. Nate, just so much is going on with the Ukraine, and, I mean, just so much. And I guess it's because we have this instant media now. You know, where at one time if something happened in the West Coast, you probably wouldn't hear about it till later that evening on the evening news or the next day or something. But now you're talking about Instagram. I mean, Instagram. I mean, something happened, you know, about like a second later. So when you're getting stuff happening from all over the world, then you're getting, you know, bombarded with all kind of stuff. But anyway, that's the way of the world. So, Ms. Renee, would you give our rundown for the day?
I would be honored. Well, of course, we start with Stop Dogging Us Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Using a Guide Dog, and the Adventures of Mr. Ray and Ms. Raven. And in the news, the good, the bad, and the ugly, news which affects the disability. Wrong intro, isn't it? Uh-huh. And we sign off with your call to action. All right, it doesn't matter. Like a friend of mine said, you know, when everything goes right, you know, anybody can do radio. But when it goes wrong, you have to punt. So, Rev, why don't we start with Stop Dogging Us Around, the good and the bad and the ugly of using a dog guide.
All right, well, all I can know is good, good, good. Have to have it on my number seven dog. I got my first dog in June of 71, and if I were write down on one side of the ledger what's good and the other side of the ledger what's bad and the third column what's ugly, good will more than double and triple the bad and the ugly together. So I am totally thrilled, and anyone that has a guide dog, I know at least 99.99% would say, there's a lot of good things that happen to guide dogs. Stop Dogging Us Around, I want to bring to your attention, please join, and a couple of people call and ask me about how do you join a user group. Well, there are a number of user groups. One, you can go to the website gdui.org, and that's an organization where a number of user groups, guide dog user group belongs to that organization, and there's a small fee to become a member. But you get a lot of information and what's going on, you know, in the guide dog community in terms of activities, terms of medical suggestions and information, and just all kind of things. So, you know, look at that in terms of joining a guide dog user group. Again, that website would be gdui.org.
What does a GDUI stand for, Rev?
Guide Dogs Users Inc. All right. And,
okay.
So please check out that website. You're right. You're living here in the DMV. That's the District, Maryland, and Virginia. We use so many acronyms. We call each other by initials instead of our names. But anyway, JB and JR. And
so anyway, thank you, Mr. Lane. We have to be mindful that everybody don't live inside of the Beltway, in the Beltway of Washington, D.C. Also, and the reason it's so important to belong to a national organization or organization that could come to your aid or advocate for you. The ADA is straining and working hard. Here in PG County, last week, a gentleman went to a restaurant with his guide dog, and they wouldn't seat him and wouldn't let him dine there. And, you know, and just caused such embarrassing situation that the person left. But they did call the Prince George County ADA person, and they got in touch with the restaurant. And, of course, the manager wasn't there at the time. So, you know, they just had a staff person just was not aware of the law and all. And they got in touch with the gentleman, apologized and all, told him he could come back anytime and give him a free meal. But my question is, after that happened, is that just enough? I mean, to say, you know, we apologize, you've been embarrassed and all, and to say, you know, you can come back and we give you a free meal. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that enough? Would you think that's enough, Ms. Renee, or any more they could do? Or I mean, I don't know.
Well,
but certainly,
you know,
their staff
Yeah, absolutely. The staff needs to be educated, and there needs to be a small placard somewhere that says that service animals are welcome. But it's one of the things we're going to talk to our guests about today. You know, people have so abridged the ADA, meaning that they have abused the term guide dog. And so, you know, I think there's going to be work on both sides. It's a shame that we have to fight this fight again, but it's going to happen. And we're going to talk about that some with our guest.
Okay, so that's stop dogging me around.
right.
And that is brought to you by one of our number one supporters. And that's real-time pain relief, which is the best-smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. And if you have a guide dog or just getting a guide dog or walking a guide dog, you can see why real-time pain relief is your friend. And we thank them for being a long-time supporter of ours. So, Ms. Renee, it's over to you to introduce our very special guest today.
Well, International Guide Dog Day is celebrated the last Wednesday of the month in April, and this year it falls on the 27th of April, and it's a day to pay tribute to the dogs around the world who do this kind of work, because it's not just for blind and low vision. There are service animals that do other work, and today we acknowledge International Guide Dog Day by inviting a representative from the oldest guide dog school in the USA, the Seeing Eye Guide Dog School, and our guest is Mary Manwaring. So welcome,
Good
Mary.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Well, thank
good
you.
To have you.
Yes, good to have you back. I mean, this you was a guest of ours to talk about your personal journey with using guide dogs. So now we have you back representing CNI Guide Dog School,
with the disclaimer, Reverend Reagan got all seven of his dogs from Morristown, New Jersey. CNI got dogs too, and just love them. All right, Mr. Nathan, let's delve into it.
Well, you know, Mary, Reverend Ray says this often, and there's a lot of truth in it. He said, we can Google anything, but in order to make it personal, we want to go beyond sort of the headlines and the regular questions. So we want to get an idea of who you are and how you ended up being a guide dog user. So where did you grow up?
Well, I am from New England, so I was born in Connecticut and moved to New Hampshire in the 60s, and then came down to New Jersey to take a job with the Seeing Eye in 2006. And I have not regretted it. It's been fantastic. It's the greatest place to work.
I want to hear more about that. Now, so when did you begin to lose your sight? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
I actually was born prematurely, so I really never had it, and I was a twin as well, and my twin lived for 3 days, and she passed away, but she would have been blind as well.
Oh, really?
But I got my first guide dog in 1986, and I didn't know a lot about guide dog schools back then, but I knew of a couple of people who had guide dogs, and I thought, wow, you know, that's the greatest way to travel, because I didn't like using a cane. You know, a cane is great. Some people do like that as their tool of choice, and that's great. But a cane made me feel blind, and I thought, you know what, I already know I'm blind. I don't need to advertise that to the world. So I want to be able to walk down the sidewalk like everybody else. So the only schools I knew of at that time were Fidelco in Connecticut, being from Connecticut, and then Seeing Eye. Well, I wasn't living in Connecticut at that point because we had moved to New Hampshire in the 60s, so I applied to Seeing Eye. I applied to Fidelco as well, but Seeing Eye answered me first, and so so I ended up coming to Seeing Eye in 1986. I got my first dog, and I just have never looked back since.
Okay. Now, just before we go there, I want to ask you something else about your education. You said that you were born blind, so where were you educated, and were you, you know, living at home, or was it residential?
I was living at home. My parents did not want to send me to a school for the blind. There was a school in Connecticut called Oak Hill, I believe it's what it's called, School for the Blind, and it was a very good school. But they wanted me to be mainstreamed and go to school with sighted children. And there were actually a lot of blind children in Connecticut. And so there were a lot of children that went to public school that were blind. And, you know, I think each one has their advantages and disadvantages. I think if you go to a school for the blind, you get better daily living skills and, you know, you're more acclimated that way. But if you go mainstream, like my parents decided to do, that's great too, because it got me integrated with other blind children, but also sighted children, and the sighted children really accepted me. I mean, we had our fun, and 1 year I got into with a group of kids that were a little, shall we say, spunky or bratty, or you know, but it was just that 1 year, and you know, it was okay. I got out of that. Sometimes I wonder, you know, like, wow, I really turned out okay for being with those kids. You know?
But, you know, I wanted to explore that a little bit, because I read a quote the other day, and I really want your reaction to it. It said, a child with disabilities often spends hours being taught how to interact with others. But why don't we spend time teaching those without disabilities how to interact with them? And so I think the story that you just shared speaks well to that. I have some experience with an experimental preschool where the philosophy of the school was to have children with disabilities. It ranged the whole gamut of disabilities, and typically developing children together. And I double-checked with one of my former teachers, and I wanted to know, was there a philosophy? Did we talk about it? And she said, no. What we did, we just put them together and let them learn how to interact with each other. And I think that's what you're saying about having attended public school. I mean, even you were in a gang. I mean, how more difficult can you be?
Right.
That's true. I think we really that's what they did, is they just let us interact together, and I learned to adapt and play in their games, and you know, and I don't know, you know, I was in with this group of kids. They were in my class, you know, and I don't know if we did anything really bad, but you know, my schoolwork kind of slacked off a little bit, and I had to get that back into good standing again, which I did, and it didn't take me long. But you know, I think it's great to have them learn together, and I never was teased for my blindness at all. It's interesting because a lot of people that I know who have been blind have been horribly teased as kids.
I never was.
Nobody ever made fun of the blindness. Nobody ever, you know, made fun of me at all.
After you were in a gang, Mary, I would be
loathe
to make fun of
you. Yeah. She was in a gang. I mean, like, hey, who want to mess with them people? but Mary, when you hear that music, Reverend Ray got to go out and pay some bills, and like people like Miss Renee and other people like that, they got to eat and everything. But after the music, we'll have our break and come back on the other side. And what I'd like you to talk about is how did you get your blind skills? Because if you want, you had to develop what we call blind skills. So I would like to know how you did that through public school. All right, Ms. Renee.
All right. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. And we're located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information that we share is for guide dog users everywhere. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
So, Mary, as we were going to the break, I wanted you to share with us, even though people say, oh, she went to public school, but you had to require some what we call blind skills. So how did you require that? Did you go somewhere special? Did they have that in the public school? How did that come about for you?
I was fortunate to be growing up in my elementary years in Connecticut because they had a lot of Braille transcribers, and they were able to get all my textbooks in Braille. They taught me to read Braille when I was six, and they had a itinerant Braille teacher who came in and for a while transcribed my work so that the teachers could read it, and then taught me to read Braille. And then as I got a little older, I learned to type. By that time, though, I was in New Hampshire. But as far as cane skills, again, Connecticut, they didn't do a lot with the cane, but they did teach me the basics. They had an O&M person come in, orientation and mobility instructor come in, and so I was taught the basics on that with using a cane. And then as I got older, like I said, with cooking and all that stuff, I attended home economic classes in high school, but I actually hired somebody had somebody come in from the state of New Hampshire, because my mother, she was just being overprotective, but being cautious, and I could understand her viewpoint, but she was a little leery to try to teach me to cook and stuff. You know, she was afraid I might get burned or whatever. And I said, well, Mom, you're not going to be here forever. I've got to learn to do these things. And so I
asked someone from the state to come in, a rehab teacher. And so I learned to cook, and my mother had to admit that I turned out to be a real good cook.
That's great. Didn't blow the house up, huh?
No.
All righty. Okay.
That was awfully mature for you to recognize that you would need the training and to go, you know, past what your parents might want for you. How old were you at that time?
Probably my late teens, early 20s.
But that's still pretty mature for a young woman to be able to do that. So I applaud you. It's hard the first time we tell our parents, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it my way. So now you talked about how you had decided between – Go ahead, Rev. You wanted to jump in on that?
I just was going to ask her, like, when you're in school, you know, you always get what you want to do when you grow up. I mean, and I know one time, you know, sometimes they don't want to ask blind people that because, like, what can you do? I mean, you know, since you was in public school, did you get that, you know, what you want to do? And I mean, somewhere along the line, you had a guidance counselor, right?
Yes, yeah, and they did ask that question, and I, at the time, I wasn't really sure what was out there. The state of New Hampshire wanted me to become a teacher, and I do have teaching skills for sure, but that's not quite the career I wanted, and I said, well, I want to go into communications. And they said, oh, no, you don't want to do that. And I said, yeah, I don't know what else there is, you know. And it was interesting because even in elementary school, they used to design tasks. They had tasks for different classes, like to take the attendance sheets to the office and or if they had other errands. And I was always chosen to do that. And then I got to work. Actually, they showed me the phone system in the office, and I don't know what actually possessed them to do that, but it was very interesting. Yeah. I think they recognized the skills that I had, and so sure enough, I ended up, you know, being a secretary. I took business administration in high school, and I really enjoyed it, and I loved working in elementary school. I actually did some tutoring with some children from their special education group, and teachers would come up to me and they'd say, hey, Mary, how did you get them to learn that? We've been trying to get that through to them for, you know, ages, and how'd you do that? So it was nice to help out to tutor like that, and it was fun.
Were you tutoring blind students or typical students?
No,
or
sighted.
What?
Excited. That's interesting.
So what would you say to a young blind person or even an older blind person listening to this show when they feel like they know what's best for their lives? How would you urge them to be their own advocate?
I would ask them to be, you know, tactful and polite, and say this is what I would like to explore, and, you know, ask the person to help them do the research necessary and to see what, you know, what skills would be needed, what technology would be needed. It's a lot easier now than it was back then. Although, actually, the first job I took was in an elementary school office, and they operated on the principle of, we're going to ask you to do things, and we're going to assume that you can do them unless you tell us otherwise. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh,
and we didn't have the technology that we have now, you know.
Right. Right. Well, tell us a little bit about how has the new technology affected what you do. You still are a communicator. We're going to talk a little bit about that. You currently field all of the calls from Seeing Eye. How has technology changed from I think you said you got your first dog in 1986. Did the job come around the same time?
No, the job was about 20 years later. And as far as seeing eye was concerned, yeah, that's about 20 years later than 86. But technology is really, even my job has changed a lot, I think, from when I first came to seeing eye. When I first came to seeing eye, we were still using little micro cassettes. We were using I was using a computer at that point, so I did have the computer, but I was typing a lot of the reports that the instructors do now themselves, because they didn't have computers out in the field then, and so mm-hmm. they would dictate their reports onto micro cassettes, and then I would transcribe them and put them into our database system. And then, you know, we were still burning CDs and DVDs back then too. And you know, further along and we were doing that. And now, you know, everything is online and the computers are faster. And golly, when I got my first computer back in the early 80s, I think it was, an old Radio Shack computer. And I think it had maybe 4K of memory, or maybe not even that. You know, it didn't have much at all. And it was DOS, and that shows you how far back it was. Didn't have Windows back then. And you had to put in your floppy disk, you know, to be able to connect to the Internet and everything. And, you know, and the operating system was on these floppy disks. And so I had one of those, and I'm like, wow, compared to that, and you had the old dial-up modems, you know, man, they were slow as molasses, you know. So things have really changed.
Well, they really have, and as you're going down the memory lane of all of that, I remember that high-pitched wheel, that tone. When it was connecting, you know, you knew
right.
It was doing something. But you really dated yourself when you said Radio Shack. Some of our younger listeners are going to say, Radio Shack, what is that? You know, but it was ubiquitous in its day. It truly was. I want to go back a little bit to your training. And, Rev, you probably should jump in here because you've had a similar training. About your training at Seeing Eye. We're just going to start it, and then we'll be ready for a break. So, Rev, why don't you begin to question about, because you have more background there, about what the training was and mindset needed to get a Seeing Eye guide dog.
Yeah, Murray, so was you surprised, Murray, or disappointed, or when you finally arrived at Seeing Eye in the whole process? I mean, what was your expectations, and what is it that that just your observation was?
I think I was a little overwhelmed at first because I thought, wow, yeah, because I remember my first walk with a guide dog, and I'm like, holy cow, can I really move that fast? I mean, because I didn't, you know, I don't know, compared to a cane, you know, you just don't, I never moved that fast with a cane.
Right.
I mean, some people can whiz right along with a cane too, but I wasn't one of those.
Right,
and
no,
so,
no, neither.
Yeah. But the guide dog, man, you just flew down the sidewalk, and I'm like, wow, is this how everybody else walks? You know, I mean, I was just really, you know, really excited about the whole thing. And my dog was great. I mean, we would maneuver in and out of people. And I remember my first training trip into New York City. And you know how crowded it was, you know, in New York City. And my dog would just, you know, weave in and out of people and get me where I needed to go. And I'm like, whoa, this is really, this is fantastic, you know.
and in terms of just the whole independence, because I know, we hear the music, we're going to come back, but I want you to share with our listening audience just the whole social setup of 18 to 22 individuals that's come from all over the country, and some from Canada sometime, to interact pool, you know, for 3 weeks. I mean, it's just something totally that's not normal. So I want you to share, get your experience with that whole social. And I know some people that stayed friends for years after they went to guide dog school and part of that class. So we'll be back. This is Reverend Ray, and we will be back on the other side.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in the Tacoma Park neighborhood of Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. 202-747-3434. Well, the first impression of the Seeing Eye Guide Dog is often the voice of Mary Manwaring. She's directing callers to the right department. But today, we take Mary from behind the switchboard to the CAGDU Radio guest chair, where Reverend Ray is about to ask her more about her first experience in training.
Now, Mary, I did go to a Maryland school for the blind with a number, you know, about 300 blind students. And I got a taste of independence, social skills and all. But when I went to the CNI school in 71, that was the first time that I felt truly independent in terms of, you know, living independently, you know, had to be responsible for my laundry, had to be responsible for another live thing, which was the dog, and then being able to know that I was going to have some transportation skills, that once I go back home, I wasn't going to have to depend on someone to take me around, or me walking real slow with that cane hitting stuff and all. So it was just, and then meeting people from different walks of life that I didn't even know some blind people can do some of the things that, and I have to say that seeing that pretty much get the cream of the crop of blind people, but I didn't know that they could be like lawyers and doctors and all the kind of things people did. So it was just fascinating to me. So what was your experience?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Although I had been sort of on my own, because I went to Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind. That's what they called it then. Now it's called Lions World, I think. But then I also went to the Carroll Center up in Massachusetts, because I wanted to get my cane skills more up to par. This was before I got the dog. So I was used to, you know, I had been on my own in a sense, going to those places and interacting with blind people. But when I got to Seeing Eye, it was really interesting because you're right. There are people coming from all walks of life, and I fit in really well. I mean, we just really got along well. In fact, you were talking about having friends that you make friends that'll, you know, you have that friendship for years. I had a friend from Massachusetts that I met at Seeing Eye, and she and I stayed in contact with each other from 86 up to her passing in late 2019. And yeah, and we would, you know, we'd call each other, and we just were, you know, we kind of supported each other. And that's what I noticed about the experience at Seeing Eye, too. Everyone was very supportive of each other. We all helped each other in class. If somebody was struggling a little bit, you know, we helped where we could. And of course, we left all the expertise to the instructors. But, you know, we...
yeah.
But we, you know, it was a great group.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah.
That was back in the days they had phone booths back then.
Yes. You had to go upstairs to the phone booth and hang out till you get your turn to call.
Right. First of all, you reintroduced us to Radio Shack and the DOS and the floppy disk and the telephone.
And now the phone booth.
The Smithsonian is going to call you, Mary. We need you to communicate down here to remind people of all of this technology we have forgotten about.
Right. Remember standing in that line for that phone booth, Ray? No.
Yes, I do. Yes, sitting there waiting for somebody else to come out the phone booth. Yes. That was.
Well, you know, I have a question I want to ask. There's so much controversy about service animals and from emotional support animals on. And, Rev, you mentioned the incident with the person in the restaurant and how people weren't aware. So, Mary, this question is for you. We know that Seeing Eye has really well-trained service animals. Do we need a new definition of service animal?
I think it does get blurry at times. You know, people that want to just transport their pets and have them go, you know, with have their pets go with them everywhere, blurs that line because it's you know, my pet. They won't call it a pet. They'll say, oh, no, this is my service animal, and you know, it comforts me when I because I get anxious traveling and all that, and so the line between emotional support and, you know, therapy dogs and that kind of stuff really gets blurred. And service animals, we still, at Seeing Eye, sometimes we'll still get calls from business owners and, you know, like, well, how do we know for sure that this is a bona fide service animal, you know, and it gets fuzzy.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because, Murray, for me, you know, and I am the president of CAGDU, Kappa Area Guide Dog Users here. And, you know, we just, it seems like we was been set back 50 years or more from all the work that schools like CNI have done with out in the field marketing and public relations. And then with these so-called service animals, businesses in the community, just sort of lumping us all together, you know, that they don't see the difference in the CNI dog that's very well trained and a pig or something or a snake running around. You know, they just lump us all together. And so it sort of set us back. And I tell my members that we just have to work that much more harder that we have. And I know because of COVID, we're not being as visible as we used to be, but we just have to really be intentional and work at being out in the community and not letting people pet our dogs, but still teaching people guide dog etiquette and seeing how the dogs work and interacting with different organizations to give us the opportunity to do some presentations. You know, we just have to work harder at it because we have, because of the emotional animals, all these other service animals has really, really put a bad taste in the mouth of the public when we worked so hard for so many years with Mars Franks and all to get guide dogs pretty much accepted, you know? I mean, they pretty much was accepted for the most part. And now we fighting that fight all over again. And I'm sure CNI gets a lot of calls about, you know, what is a guide dog and, you know, and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, I think COVID has set us back a bit, too, because now everybody's out again. And, you know, and they want to take their pets with them and pass them off as service animals. And, you know, and it really does. We do have to work harder, I think, because, I don't know, people, as long as we've been around and everything, but we still need to educate people, I believe, in what a true service animal is. And you know, Seeing Eye dogs are some of the best behaved service animals around, you know.
No, I agree with you. I was up for one of the gatherings that they had, and we were there for the entire weekend, And I heard one dog bark one time, and that was very brief. But that whole time, there was no barking, no yapping, no anything. It was, like, surprising to me how well these dogs interacted with each other and with their handlers. And that brings me to the question you talked about, education. How do you handle people who want to pet, interact, give food to your dog when they approach you? Or does your dog bite? Can my child pet your dog? How do you handle that? You talked about good manners. Ever since you've been out of the gang, I see that that's, you know, predominating your behavior. So as this newfound woman with these manners, how do you handle that now?
I'm polite about it because I'm cognizant of the fact that no matter where I go, I'm still representing Seeing Eye. And that is very important to me. And so I just nicely tell people, you know, this is a working dog. You don't touch it. You don't make eye contact with it. You don't feed it because it has a job to do. And if you want to pet it or feed it or make eye contact, you're distracting the dog. And it's like taking a steering wheel away from somebody who's driving. You just can't do it.
And, you know, a lot of people, I think, I haven't heard anybody say about the steering wheel, but I think that that's something that so many people are drivers would understand that because all of the things that I hear people who are using guide dogs ask people not to do, they still do it. I've even been on the elevator where they'll snap their hand down at their side like nobody can hear. You snap your finger at the dog. It's
yeah, right.
Yeah. I know. What do you like best about your job?
Just the interaction with people, because I talk to people from all walks of life and you know, and they're going through various chapters of their life, and so it's just the interaction, and I still love the fact of being around the students that are coming in, whether they're replacing or whether they're getting their first dog. It just never gets old to see the transformation that takes place.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, the treasurer of CAGDU is she will be up there Monday to get her next dog. No, that Jane of CAGDU.
Feinstein. Yeah, I'm sorry.
She'll be up
coming
there to get her dog.
Huh. Well, definitely look forward to seeing her. Yep, to meeting her.
Joyce. Yeah,
Joyce
Feinstein,
isn't it?
She'll be up there to get her dog.
Oh, good. Well, you know, something just before we go to break, I want to ask you, and something we rarely talk about, you know, they talk about that someone who receives a dog should have orientation and mobility, able to walk X number of miles per day. And they also talk about being financially able to care for a dog. What does that mean? You know, some people might read that and think that they are priced out of the market. Others might read it and think that they need a lot of money. Can you give us an idea of the kinds of things that as a dog handler that you expenses that you incur? What does it cost to get a guide dog from Seeing Eye? That kind of thing?
Yeah, for a first-time person, we don't charge what the dog is, you know, how much it would cost us to train it from a puppy all the way through its life. I mean, that's and I think that's what some people think that we do, you know, because they'll say, well, because I get calls sometimes from people that, well, you know, they cost about 60-something thousand, don't they? And I said, for training, yes, I said, but not not for the blind person. I said, we, you know, it's $150 for the first dog. And that price never changed from that was established when Morris Frank founded Seeing Eye, and it's stayed $150 ever since, back in 1929. And then we it's $50 for every subsequent dog. And, you know, like some schools will give stipends, I think, for veterinary and for food and stuff. We don't do that. But that's something that has to be considered. A person doesn't have to have a lot of money, but they have to be able to have the finances to be able to get the dog food and get their dog the appropriate vaccines and you know, just regular vet visits and grooming. Some people take and clip their own dog's nails. I'm not quite that brave, but it can be done though. If you have the right nail clippers, they have a guard on them and you follow the curve of the nail and you can do it. But that's not me.
But coming back to that, Ms. Renee, but the point is the dog is not a pet. These people don't get these dogs as pets. People that get these dogs are people that's looking to work, looking to be producing. So if they're producing, then they will have the minimum finances to be able to take care and care for a guide dog. So these dogs, it's not given to people random that's not doing anything. Usually people that get a guide dog, they have been vetted, and they need a dog to be able to add to the quality of their life, not just a pet.
I think that's an important point to make, because there is a big investment, and you want to see a return on your investment. But Reb, you know, mm-hmm. the music thing, it means that if we had more of these kind of musical interludes, we could have paid we could have gone internationally, Mary, you and me, to celebrate the international guide dog to maybe France or somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, we'll go to our last break. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is the capital area dog guide users located in the nation's capital. Well, when something runs smoothly, oftentimes we don't think about how it happens, but Mary Manweather, her voice directs you to the department or the person you need at Seeing Eye, but she is about to make a life change. So, Mary, you are going to be, drum roll please, retiring.
Yeah, that's true. I am. I have announced my retirement, and after being here for 16 years, I was 16 years in January, so it'll be almost it's working on almost 17 now. But and I think I'm going to go back to New England. It looks that way. I want to get into retirement type communities, and so Oriole being my fifth guide dog now, are about to embark on new adventures.
Well, before you go,
I want to ask a couple questions. Rev always finishes off with this. What lessons has your work life taught you?
Patience. You really need patience. I mean, especially, you know, the more you're working with people, you know, because I get a variety of type phone calls, and you know, it seems like sometimes I'm putting out fires, you know, in the sense of, you know, people will call and they're upset about something. Sometimes people don't understand fundraising, for instance. And, you know, so some people will call and they're all upset. I don't know how I got on your list. I'm not blind and, you know, and I don't understand. And so they're very, you know, upset. And so you got to calm them down a bit and kind of explain it a little bit. And so I think it's taught me patience, and that has spilled over into my working a guide dog too, because these dogs are well trained. but they are dogs. And I remind, sometimes I'll remind the public of that too, you know, that, that they are dogs and they're going to act like dogs sometimes. So, you know, you have to be patient with them and just, you know, talk to them with a calm, quiet voice and correct when necessary. And so, yeah, I think patience is probably the biggest thing that I've learned.
Okay. And do you have any favorite stories from your work life? You shared about your longtime friend that you had met in one of your classes. But do you have any other favorite stories from your work life that you can share with us?
I think just the joy of helping others, just being able to, it's like I told somebody the other day, because I get calls sometimes from people that, you know, has nothing to do with seeing eye, but yet I'm able to answer their question. For instance, like somebody will call and they're trying to find a Braille card of some sort, whether it be a somebody called me the other day for a sympathy card. Where can I find Braille sympathy cards? And, you know, has nothing to do with seeing eye. You know,
right,
seeing
right.
eye has all the answers, you know.
Right.
So, so just being able to help others, I think, has been my joy, the satisfaction of, like, wow, you know, the Lord really has gifted me and is working through me to help these people. And I just, it's a real heartwarming feeling.
What will happen to Oreo in your retirement? Because people often ask, when people are no longer actively working, do they turn the dogs back in, or what happens?
Oh no, we're going to be we're active now, but we're probably going to be even more active once I retire.
Yes,
no, she definitely is going to have a job to do for sure. We'll be walking in new areas, and the thing I like about these retirement communities, they have a lot of various types of activities, and now that COVID restrictions are starting to lift, they've got, you know, trips. Field trips planned, and so Oriole and I will be, you know, I'm sure going on some of those and being closer now to Boston, because I'm going, pretty sure I'm going back up to New England. You know, I'll be able to attend some of these games, and I just enjoy. Oriole is going to go to her first hockey game on Sunday, though. We're going to see the Devils play, and I've been to Devils games before, but I've had my other dogs this will be her first hockey game, though. I don't think, as a puppy, I don't think she went to see the Devils. She may have gone to see the Patriots over in Somerset County, maybe, or whatever. But she has. I don't think she's been to a hockey game.
Her when they play the Washington Capitals, she is to cheer for the Washington Capitals, not the other team.
Murray, so have CNI hired a new person to in your position where you'll have time to train that person, or how's that going to work?
I haven't actually given them a date. It's going to probably be, I originally said it might be October 1st, but it might be sooner than that. It might be July 1st. So I'm waiting to hear back from a couple of things that I need from human resources with regard to my pension. I want a ballpark figure. And once I get that and everything, then I can make my decision. I've got two places in New England that I'm looking at. And I've been on virtual tours for one of them, and the other one I'm doing a virtual tour tomorrow. And so once I can make a decision, then they can start,
right.
thinking about what they're going to do here. They've already told me, they said, you're going to be really hard to replace. You know so much about the organization
indeed.
And all that. I said, you guys, thank you. You'll be fine, though.
well,
but, you know, I also want to say this. Go ahead.
No, when I told Rev you were retiring, you would have thought that you were retiring from his personal sphere. He was like, no, it won't be the same. So, you know, I think you're going to get a lot more of that reaction.
Yeah. I'm sure.
But
definitely.
But the thing is, Ms. Renee, in these last 5 years probably, that whole group of people that started with CNI are retiring. It's like a whole turn or a whole generation that have been there for 30. Isn't that right, Mary? Been there for 30
years or more.
That's true.
There have been a bunch of us that have been retiring.
Some
of the kitchen staff, kitchen manager, and his one of his cooks, and now, Lee Johnson, who's been here forever. There's been a few of them. Dr. Holly is retired, and in fact, somebody said to me the other day, they said, hey, what is it with this stuff? Everybody's jumping ship. I said, well, I don't know if I call it that.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's just that age, that whole group that's been there for 20, 30
right.
years or more. You know, that's
just
that whole group
now.
We should
call you the Radio Shack crew. The Radio Shack crew. That is leaving. They're the only ones that would know about floppy disks and DOS and Radio Shack. And as soon as you can pass that questionnaire, then you're allowed to retire. Well, unfortunately.
Well, thank you
unfortunately,
very much, Murray.
Reverend Ray will have to get over his loss, but I'm sure they'll be gracious to the new person that's coming in. Reverend Ray, we're out of time. The hour runs too short. Any more questions for Mary?
No, that's about it, Mary. And we so appreciate you once again taking time to share with us about CNI and the experience of guide dogs that you have had with guide dogs. And we wish you all the best in your retirement. You might be moving from one role, but you'll be moving into another role. So we wish you all the best.
It's been a pleasure. These hours do go by very quickly, and I've enjoyed myself immensely, and I wish you guys continued success as well, and looking forward to it. It's kind of bittersweet, you know. It's seeing
yes,
eye
I
know. Is always going to be extended family and that kind of thing, but it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Well, Mary, please don't go to the retirement center and start a gang, okay?
Well, the gang is only part of my class. It wasn't like a street gang, you know.
Right.
Well, now that you have more time on your hands.
In that retirement building, they say, somebody getting a gang up, or old people, the seniors. Panthers or something. We don't know. All right, Murray. Thank you very much. Thank Mr. Craig for allowing you to be part of this. We thank you. All righty.
No problem. Thank you much.
Okay. God bless
thank you.
All right.
You too.
Okay. All right, Ms. Renee. We didn't ask a lot of questions about guide dog, whatever, but but anyway. We appreciate Murray once again. And, I am sad. How you get so used to just hearing the voice or just the personality of an organization. So it is going to be a change for me to adapt to. When I dial up there, that 800-93, it's going to be different for me. Okay, Ms. Renee, so anything before I sign off?
Well, no, just our usual stuff. You need to let our listeners know who they've been listening to. So why don't I take care of that, and then we'll have you sign off. You have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways at our Gmail. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's C-A-G-D as in David, U as in umbrella, 2020@gmail.com. If you want to listen to this show again or a past show, go to our website, cagdu.org, and click on the radio show button. That's cagdu.org, and click on the radio show button. Or you can give us a call at 301-263-7371. That's 301-263-7371. All right, Rev, why don't you take us out?
All right, our time is up. We thank you for your time. Until the next time, I'm Reverend Ray, and I'd like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision, vision, vision. And remember, you can hug your honey, but pet your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
And thanks for listening. Tune in for more information about guide dogs and you.